General Motors made a big announcement this week that sent shockwaves through the auto industry and Washington. The company will cut more than 14,000 salaried positions and idle 5 of its factories in the U.S. and Canada.
The move is part of a company-wide restructuring plan, and it has angered President Trump. He told reporters this week that he shared his frustrations with GM CEO Mary Barra.
I said, you know, this country's done a lot for General Motors. You better get back in there soon. That's Ohio. And you better get back in there soon. So we have a lot of pressure on them. You have senators, you have a lot of other people, a lot of pressure.
Micheline Maynard is a longtime auto industry reporter and the author of multiple books about the industry. Mickey, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. I'm so glad to be with you.
Can you first talk about the impact of these cuts on the communities in the cities in the Midwest and Canada that they're located in?
Well, it's really kind of a shock. If you think back almost 10 years now to when the Janesville plant closed in Wisconsin, we kind of knew that was coming. I mean, we actually had years when it was expected that that plant would close. There were hardly any rumors at all about Lordstown in Ohio, the General Motors Pulltown plant here in Detroit, or Oshawa in Ontario. Now, Oshawa did not have a product guaranteed after 2019. So a lot of people figured, well, there's going to be negotiations and they'll put something in that factory. And no, lo and behold, they announced plans to close it. And then there's also transmission plants and a couple of others that will close as well. So I think the first reaction is shock. The second reaction is, what can we do about this? And the third reaction is, what is it going to mean for me if I'm someone who works in one of those factories?
Are we going to see a lot of secondary impact? These auto plants themselves close, the particular, like the transmission plant you mentioned, outside suppliers, auto parts manufacturers. Is this going to close some of them down, or are they able to shift manufacturing to the factories that are still going to be in business?
Well, it's said that every assembly plant job then triggers 3 to 4 more jobs in either other parts companies. You know, if there's a coffee shop across the street from the plant, that sort of thing, they call it the spillover effect. So some of these suppliers are single source suppliers. So, you know, if you make the dashboard for the Impala, you're only making the dashboard for the Impala, and that's one of the cars that's going to go away. So some of these suppliers will be hurt. But yes, there are other car companies, and a lot of these suppliers that are still around are pretty nimble. So I'm sure they're going to be pitching work to other places.
Let's get into why and why now. People have pointed at a lot of causes. One biggie, a common theme seems to be these are plants that are making cars that the American public isn't as interested in and maybe aren't being marketed effectively to the American public.
Right. I actually think it's the latter. I think that Detroit companies in particular have made a specific decision over the last couple of years that they will focus their marketing efforts on SUVs, crossover vehicles, which are car-based sport utilities, and pickup trucks. And it's easy to see why. That's where the profits are. We have reasonable gas prices. So when gas is below $3 a gallon, it's much easier to sell these big vehicles. And the other thing about cars is they're more expensive to produce than pickups and SUVs. And so you might have a car selling for, say, $24,000, but the profit margin is $2,000. You have a pickup truck selling for $24,000, and they're making $6,000 to $8,000 on it. So you can kind of see why they would put the marketing focus on the bigger vehicles.
I want to stay on this point because a story I keep hearing from some people in the industry and elsewhere, the story is, we Americans, we want the big cars, we want the cargo space, whatever. That's not the whole story, though, it sounds like you're saying.
No, the interesting thing is the Japanese automakers started building cars in the United States in the 1980s and then really ramped up production in the 90s and the zeros. And essentially, Detroit has kind of waved the white flag in terms of car sales, not obviously SUV and pickup sales, but in terms of automobile sales. They're basically saying, you know what, we're just going to give that piece of the market over to the import companies, which are making these vehicles in the U.S. and Canada, and we're going to focus on the places that we think we can make money.
We're talking about GM plant closures and layoffs with longtime auto industry reporter Micheline Maynard. And Micheline, let's get into now another part of the demand story. And or actually the future of the industry, the idea that, okay, the future is electric cars, autonomous cars. One theory, one idea I've seen is that GM is saying, we need to cut costs now, save some money to help fund this innovative future. Is that part of the story?
Well, it's a piece of the story. So I think the Detroit car makers were very surprised when Tesla came along. Tesla obviously only makes electric cars. And at first, Tesla wasn't that much of a threat because it started really high with electric vehicles, with like $100,000 electric vehicles. And then it introduced the Model S, which was $70,000. But then it introduced its most recent model, the Model 3, which is supposed to cost between $35,000 and about $45,000. Well, that's what a General Motors car costs. And they have had a lot of startup problems with the Model 3. They're not there yet. They don't have the production levels, but they've definitely demonstrated that you can come in and specialize in electric vehicles and take away some pretty high-powered buyers. So the Detroit companies are kind of late to this game, and I'm not 100% sure how large the electric vehicle market is going to be. I mean, it may be more of a specialty market. I think the bigger issue is alternatives to cars altogether, to owning cars, I should say, because since the car companies were bailed out in 2008, we've seen Uber and Lyft come along. We've seen a lot of places get bike sharing. We've seen scooters start to show up in cities all across the country. And a lot of people are rethinking whether they need to actually own a car at all. It doesn't mean that they won't use them. It just means that they won't actually pay for one and pay the insurance and the other costs that are related to that. Obviously, if you have a farm, you know, in Eau Claire, you're going to need a pickup truck. So I'm not saying that you're going to be riding a scooter. But if, you know, you're going to Marquette, you might get on a scooter once in a while.
There was question as to whether that was a temporary story. You had young people coming out of college, say, with debt in the Great Recession. Okay, sure, they're not going to buy a car now. No problem. Automakers might think things will recover. They'll have money. They'll start buying our cars in the future. Not necessarily so.
No, because millennials are people born between 1982 and the year 2000. The millennials love cities. So if you go to Chicago, millennials are everywhere, and they're staying longer in cities than boomers did and Gen Xers did. You know, the Gen Xers, you know, my generation, you might have lived in a city, but you got married and you had your kids and then you went to the suburbs. The millennials are not necessarily, they're not getting married as young as some people used to. They're staying in cities longer after they get married or meet their partners. And then when they have their kids, they're kind of toughing it out and they're trying life in the city with children, you know. So their dream is not to have that big suburban home, you know, with a lawn and a pool. Their dream is to have some cool kind of a loft where they can walk to things. So it really is an attitudinal shift among these young people. And then their younger brothers and sisters are growing up watching them, you know, deal with life by not owning a car. And that's the message that they're getting. So I think it's not so much regular people, you know, people who are maybe 40 and up. I think it's people 40 and under that are pushing this big change on the car manufacturers.
Let's throw another factor in here now, tariffs. Tariffs on things like steel and aluminum, which I think are big parts of making cars still these days. Is this a big enough deal that it's closing plants, or just a smaller fraction of the story?
No, what it's doing is it's taking away profits. So I've covered the car companies for a long time, and there used to be these annual negotiations with U.S. Steel and the other steelmakers over these contracts, and they would get down to the penny per ton of steel. I mean, like a $5 increase in a ton of steel would shake Detroit. You know, we can't afford that. And so to see these tariffs come in out of nowhere and to realize that, you know, they're going to have to swallow this, all the car companies are cost-cutting. It isn't just General Motors. I mean, Ford is looking for ways to cut costs, and so is Chrysler, and so are the Japanese and the German and the Korean car makers. So the steel tariffs have really shaken the industry, and they're trying to figure out, is there some way around them?
We're talking to Mickey Maynard, auto industry reporter, about thousands of layoffs at GM and the company's decision to close 5 plants in the U.S. and Canada.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about these closures and layoffs and what they mean for American workers? If you used to work in GM's Janesville plant, what memories does this news bring up for you? How did those layoffs affect you and your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time.
Right now, we're picking up our conversation about layoffs and plant closures at General Motors. Mickey Maynard is with us. She's a longtime auto industry reporter.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a GM customer yourself with one of the brands they make? Are you sad to see some of these models go? If you are a person or household with no car, why did you opt to go without one? By necessity or by choice? Do you foresee yourself ever getting a car? Maybe if you have a family later in life. Do you have a question about these closures and how they all fit into the industry, what it means for workers, consumers, and car makers? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. Mickey, another piece of many moving pieces here. NAFTA, the trade deal formerly known as NAFTA, some updates, not a huge overhaul. Did any of the changes that just got made between Mexico, the U.S., and Canada factor into this GM decision?
I don't think the NAFTA 2, the revised NAFTA agreement, plays as much of a role in it. In fact, if you look at the language in NAFTA 2, essentially there was some language that was meant to protect the Detroit car makers. There was going to be a limit put on the number of vehicles that could be built in Canada and then sent to the United States. And it was a pretty high ceiling, and there wasn't any opportunity really for Detroit to meet it. But now that General Motors is closing Oshawa, it definitely won't meet it. So I think one of the factors is the Canadian election. So Justin Trudeau has to announce elections no later than next October of 2019, and the General Motors plant in Oshawa would be closing right around the end of the model year in 2019. So I think actually General Motors wanted to get the announcement out there before it became a Canadian election issue, but it probably will be a Canadian election issue anyway.
Speaking of the politics of this, we heard earlier President Trump angry about this deal, Ohio's Republican and Democratic U.S. senators angry about this deal, trying to put pressure from GM. Does it matter? Does anything they say really make a difference?
Well, it's interesting because Senator Sherrod Brown, who's one of the senators from Ohio, had introduced this legislation to give buyers of American cars, I think, a $3,500 tax credit. But, you know, that brings up the issue, what is an American car? Because really, there are more cars built at Toyota and Honda and Hyundai and Mercedes-Benz than there are built by the Detroit car makers right now because of the shift to SUVs and pickups. So you can give everybody a $3,500 credit to buy a car, but what we found out a few years ago when the government did something like this is that people just went and bought what they wanted to buy, and imports got their share of the business too. So legally, I'm not sure what can be done to fuel sales of American car company vehicles over Japanese, German, and Korean vehicles that are made in the United States.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jeremy is with us in Viroqua. Jeremy, hi. Well, we lost Jeremy. We will bring on Mark in Three Lakes then. Nope, something's wrong with our phones. Okay, let me try to sum up their questions. Jeremy, I think, was wondering about, do you know, this, Mickey, if these tariffs would affect other big manufacturers of things like tractors, your John Deere's and things like that? The auto industry, not the only one hit by steel or aluminum tariffs.
Oh, right. I mean, it affects everybody who uses steel and aluminum. And so if you're John Deere, if you're Harvester, if you're making lawnmowers, it affects anyone who uses those metals.
All right. Thanks for the call. I think we have a problem with our call screen right now, so we'll see if we can get any callers. Just you and me then in the meantime, mm-hmm. Mickey. So are you looking, all right, this is GM. Are you looking at Ford or Chrysler? Are there other shoes waiting to drop here?
Right. So everyone in Detroit is looking at Ford because if you'll remember, Ford did not get the federal bailout. Ford did not file for bankruptcy. But one of the things that has hit Ford is, you know, it self-financed. It went out and borrowed the money so it could do its overhaul 10 years ago. Now it's got to pay the debt. Now it's got to pay the interest on all of those loans. And Ford had talked about becoming this mobility company where it shifted away from automobile production and over to electric vehicles, but also partnerships with scooter companies and stuff like that. And what it found was that in the near term, there just isn't the money in that. And so they actually let their CEO go, who came up with this idea, and they've put back a strategy of, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to focus on this, but in the meantime, you know, we need to make sure that we make enough money to run the company. So everyone is watching Ford to see whether there will be job cuts. I don't expect plant closings at Ford only because I think Ford's closed just about everything that, you know, that they can close. But on the other hand, we didn't know that these General Motors plant closings were coming either. And then with Chrysler, there's so many questions about the future of Chrysler because the CEO of Fiat Chrysler died earlier this year. And you know, there's a new CEO, but nobody knows if he's going to follow the same strategy of the old one.
Talking to Mickey Maynard, auto industry reporter, looking at the GM announcement of plant closures. That announcement came earlier this week. Mickey, another change in the auto landscape. We had these CAFE standards, the fuel economy standards under the Obama administration going up over a course of years. Now the Trump administration backing away from those. How does that affect the auto industry?
Well, it's a time of some confusion over CAFE, and it's important because car makers do their product planning out about 5 years. And so, for example, I'm just pulling this number out of the air. If you know that in 2024 your vehicles have to achieve 35 mile per gallon fuel economy standards, you have to get the engines, you have to get the transmissions, you have to do the design work so that you can achieve that. And then if you're like in 2019 and you don't know, you know, you have to make a call of your own on whether those standards are going to be in place. And I think the other issue on fuel economy is that, you know, gasoline has been relatively inexpensive this year and it's been coming down a lot lately. And so that tends to power sales of SUVs and pickup trucks. But there can always be some kind of global tension. There can always be something that sends gas prices and oil prices right back up again. And I think the auto industry has learned that can change within months. So they really, I mean, people are kind of questioning the General Motors decision to kill all those cars because what happens if oil prices go up and they don't really have a car lineup? So that's, you know, that raised eyebrows when they decided to kill the cars that they did.
I've seen some analysis about investing in the auto industry, and there's an idea that in the investment world, you've got people looking at Silicon Valley, ooh, sexy, dynamic, cool stuff coming out, Tesla, wow. And then they look at the big three in particular, ooh, boring, long-term thinking, stodgy, old-fashioned companies. Is that something that actually affects the financing of auto companies and the way they think?
Yes. I do think that investors got really carried away about Tesla. And I think obviously Tesla was a tech play versus a car play. And that was all fine until Tesla actually had to build some cars. And then their CEO made some very controversial statements. And all of a sudden, Tesla's stock loses some of its value. I think with the Detroit companies, it's been known for years now, ever since the companies came out of bankruptcy and ever since Ford dealt with its financial problems, that these are long-term investments that you usually buy for the dividends, not because you expect the stock price to go up. And there's a lot of people that look at that and go, well, gosh, I can buy a tech stock and I might gain $10, $20, $30 in a year and it might be a faster way to make more money. You know, the days of buying a stock and keeping it 30 years are kind of over for a lot of investors, and that's still what you really have to do with the Detroit auto stock.
Now, we've seen ups and downs among the big three over decades, of course. Big picture, what is their health like in 2018?
Well, right at the moment, the car companies have been doing quite well. I mean, this year had been a good year for them. Now, with General Motors announcing the plant closings, it's a question of whether they'll take a charge against earnings in 2018 or wait until 2019. But until recently, this had been looked at as a good year for the car companies. Maybe not the best year ever, but certainly they've been profitable. So, and that is one of the things about Detroit is that, you know, there is a school of thought that you make your cuts when you're making money because you don't want to be forced into making them when you're not making money.
We'll leave it there for now. Mickey, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking to Micheline Maynard. She's an author and journalist. She's been covering the auto industry for quite some years. She was with us to talk about the impact of GM's announced plant closures and layoffs and what it all says about the changes in the auto industry. Our phone lines died there, so we weren't able to hear from you. That said, you can still share your thoughts with us. You can message us on the Ideas Network Facebook page, email ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at Central Time WPR with your reactions to this news from GM. And if you've experienced a plant closure like these places in Ohio, Michigan, Ontario are going through now, you can tell us how it affected you, how it affected your neighborhood and your community. Again, you can always reach us. Email ideas@WPR.org, post or message on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or tweet us at Central Time WPR.